5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The date is March 29th, 1982. The place is the Superdome in New Orleans, Louisiana. The event is the NCAA basketball finals. And there are two players on the court that really moved me. And they don't move me that night particularly, but they moved me for the rest of my life. One of the players you probably all have heard of, his name is Michael Jordan. But this was Michael Jordan before he became Michael Jordan. He was a freshman playing for the University of North Carolina. On the other side of the court was a young man by the name of Freddie Brown, who played for the University of Georgetown. That night, those two players became entwined for eternity, for an event that will be spoken of for eternity. What does that event, that date, those two players, and a dog named Jet have anything to do with today's podcast? Well, hold on to your horses, guys, because this is going to be another great podcast. This is your friend, Dr. Tom Iannelli, your cancer survivorship bus driver, along with his friend and co-host, Angel Santana. Hello, Angel.
I'm excited about talking about New Orleans there.
Well, I was hoping you'd be talking more about the players and the event.
Well, I'm excited because I've been to New Orleans. So, I'm a little excited.
One question, Angel. Were you even born in 1982?
I was born in 1978. You always think I'm younger, but God
bless
you. Well,
you look younger. You're a young man in my book. Everything is relative. Everything is relative, my friend. So I'm going to start the story. Actually, I'm going to go first to current day, then go backwards and bring it all together. And it's all going to sort of make sense because what we're going to be talking about today, we're going to launch a new module. And this is going to be a module entitled, what do you want from your caregiver? This is going to be a module that's going to help survivors sort of identify key characteristics of the people taking care of them, people that they're going to be trusting with their lives. And the first one I thought appropriate would be to talk about confidence and humility, believe it or not, because they're really a two-headed monster. And I think it's a characteristic that doctors and nurses really need to have in order to be successful in treating their beautiful, wonderful survivors. So going back to the future, actually talking about the present. So maybe about a couple of months ago, my beautiful dog. So I'm a dog guy. My wife and I have two Great Danes, and my favorite dog is, her name is Jet. She's my baby. Jet started having some problems and started having some difficulty walking. And of course, we're concerned. I mean, this is not a little dog. This is a 165-pound dog, and didn't really know what was going on with her. Brought her to a few vets, and nobody really kind of knew what was going on. Finally found an amazing vet, a neurologist over in Brewster, New York, Dr. Berg and Dr. Gibson, wonderful people, great doctors, kind of figured it out. And I remember a conversation on a Saturday that I had with the doctor, and I have to say, the amount of confidence that the doctor had and the amount of assurance that he had and she had, they were a man and a woman, were really so soothing to me that I thought, and again, being a vet or being an animal, having dogs and all that, we as dog people love our dogs and our pets, but imagine the significance now of our cancer survivors, our cancer patients, and we have to then up it by a trillion, right? Because this is now a whole different story. But it was that experience that really took me back to the 1982 NCAA finals with those two men we talked about, Freddie Brown and Michael Jordan. So I want you to picture, now this is in the days when basketball shorts were shorts. They didn't go down to your knees, and everything was very simple. It was March 29th, and I remember seeing the game, and nobody knew who Michael Jordan was. He was just this lanky freshman who played for North Carolina, number 23. And really everybody knew James Worthy, who played on that team, and Sam Perkins and Matt Dougherty and all those other guys who played on that team. And on the other end of the court was the Georgetown Hoyas with Patrick Ewing, you might have heard of, and all these other Sleepy Floyd. And the game was just an incredible game. It just was one of those amazing games. And it went back and forth. I think there were 15 lead changes. And there's about a minute left. And Georgetown is down by a point. And Sleepy Floyd dribbles the ball down and makes the shot that came out of his you-know-what. The ball hits the front of the rim, kind of bounces around, then goes in. And everyone's thinking, that's it. Georgetown's winning this game. That's the end of it. The North Carolina Tar Heels come back with about maybe 15 seconds left. They look like they don't know what the heck to do with the ball. Everybody's covered except for one guy, the freshman, Michael Jordan, and he gets the ball passed to him. And of course, Michael Jordan does what Michael Jordan always did and always will do in our minds. He threw the ball up and it went right through the hoop. Didn't even touch the rim, just a swish. And that the story doesn't end there, though. Georgetown takes the ball with 15 seconds left. And the point guard, Freddie Brown, brings the ball back down and he's ready to give it a try to try to score and win the game. And Freddie Brown did something that will be remembered forever, probably maybe even more so than Michael Jordan's shot. And that's his turnover. He didn't just turn the ball over. The ball didn't just hit his ankle and go out of bounds. The ball didn't get stolen. He literally threw the ball to the opposing player, thinking that it was his player. And, you know, North Carolina Nation goes crazy. They win the national championship, and that's that. So why am I telling you the story about my dog, about these great doctors who come to the table with assurance and confidence, and about Freddie Brown? Because it's a metaphor, right, Angel?
Yes.
We tell stories and we tell metaphors, and it's really a metaphor on life. The metaphor is that this unknown freshman on a team full of All-Americans being coached by one of the legendary coaches of all time takes a shot he should have never taken because he had that confidence that he knew he was going to hit that ball. And he went on to have one of the most storied careers in the history of sports. Freddie Brown, on the other hand, took a moment where he made a mistake that will be remembered forever. But did Freddie Brown stop living his life after that moment? Not only did he not stop living his life after that moment, he began living his life after that moment. I am more impressed with Freddie Brown and how he put himself together and how he pulled it together after that mistake. And how his life impacted so many people after that. For example, Freddie Brown, who was a promising basketball player the following year. So now not only is he known as the guy who blew the game, and it wasn't just any game, it was the national championship. Then he hurts his knee, has to have knee surgery. He's not the same. But that Georgetown team, the team that got basically crushed, had the big Tar Heel, you know, squishing their heads down into that mud, came back, resurrected themselves, and actually won the national championship the next game. Who did John Thompson, the coach, hug first?
Patrick Ewing?
No.
Oh.
He hugged Freddie Brown. And who hoisted that national championship trophy?
Patrick Ewing?
No. Oh. Freddie Brown. Who went on to graduate Georgetown and have a great career in finance and investments?
Patrick Ewing?
Freddie Brown.
Oh.
Who went on to Georgetown Law School?
Patrick Ewing?
Freddie Brown.
Oh,
who went on to marry a wonderful woman and have a great family whose all of his kids went to Ivy League schools?
Freddie Brown?
Freddie Brown.
Yeah, I'm getting
and
now.
Who went on to help go back to the hood, as they say, in New York City, and work with a organization called HOPE, which tries to help poverty-stricken youths stay in school and emphasize their education.
The amazing Freddie Brown.
The amazing Freddie Brown. So when we talk about confidence, when we talk about your caretaker, I'm sorry, I did it again. We talk about your caregiver. who walks into the room, you're scared, you're petrified, you're mortified, you're terrorized, and you're looking at the end of your life, and a person walks in the room and they have a combination of the self-assurance of Michael Jordan, but the humility of Freddie Brown. And they mix these two paradoxical ingredients together to make a characteristic that is going to be so valuable for our cancer survivors that the power of this concoction is limitless. There is no way to even measure the power of this concoction.
That's deep, you know.
Well, I'm hoping it's deep. I'm hoping that I'm able to use this metaphor to help our cancer survivors look for this trait, because one cannot exist without the other. Mm. Now, you know what I do? I always do my homework before a podcast. And my homework this week was to actually do some research on this exact topic. So why do physicians need confidence? There is a fascinating body of research on the qualities patients consider to be essential in an excellent physician. Among those qualities, self-confidence often ranks high. Why? Not unexpectedly, self-confidence in a physician tends to engender trust in the patient. After all, if you needed medical treatment, wouldn't you prefer a physician who seemed to know exactly what they were doing? Mm. I would.
Yeah.
At the same time, we physicians operate in a realm of great uncertainty. The human body is enormously complex and medical science seemingly infinite. No one is more aware than we are that there is much we do not yet know. Furthermore, it doesn't take long on the job to realize that even seemingly simple situations can surprise us. Young physicians quickly learn there is no crystal ball. So here you see a statement written in a journal looking at the importance of confidence, yet with the knowledge that we as physicians don't know everything, yet have to bring this confidence with a strong, a strong mix of humility. Mm. And what I think you'll see, this word that we use is confidence. The two ingredients to build this confidence would be your experience, because as you gain experience, you become more self-confident, more self-assured. In addition, you look at your successes. So you take a patient, you're doing a surgery, you have a successful surgery, a successful outcome, you have your second patient, and then hundreds of thousands of patients later, this experience also builds that self-assurance. Mm-hmm. Then you take this humility, which remember, as physicians, and I'm speaking for all of us, I believe, we don't usually remember all of our successes, but we will remember each one of our failures. And I actually have a term for this. I call this the 8% rule. The 8% rule is that physicians, even if they do everything perfectly, so if you're a surgeon, a medical oncologist, a radiation oncologist, you do everything perfect. Your cut is perfect. Your operation is perfect. Your chemotherapy is perfect. Your x-ray plan is perfect. Everything is perfect. 8% of the people that you touch, you will hurt. You will harm, you will give them symptoms, or they will fail. That's if you do everything perfectly and you do everything right. Mm. And we will always remember those side effects. In addition, I've said this before on this podcast, any wise physician who's been around the block a few times is smart enough to know how dumb they are. We always talk about Socrates. We talk about philosophers and why was Socrates thought to be the smartest, the most, cogent person of his time, according to the Oracle of Delphi, was because he was smart enough to know what he didn't know. And I think that as we, as physicians, as healers, we really need to realize that we are still in prehistoric times when it comes to treatments. There are limitations to our medical knowledge. There's limitations to our data. I will give you an interesting statistic. If a patient comes in to see me after they have a lumpectomy, which is just a small surgery for the breast cancer, they don't have their breast taken off or a mastectomy, they have what's called a lumpectomy, they get radiation to prevent the cancer from coming back. Mm. Say there's a 25% chance that this cancer will come back. And that's the rationale of why we try to tell these patients that they should have radiation, because it's the standard of care. It's the quality. This is the data. There's a 25% rate of failure if you don't receive the radiation. But a patient once said to me, well, if there's a 1 in 4% chance that this will come back, does that mean, do you know who this cancer is going to come back in? And I say, we don't know. So they said back to me, they said, so statistically, you're radiating 4 women, but you're only giving 1 woman that benefit, and you're radiating 3 women for no reason. And I said, wow, that's a very powerful statement, because it's actually really true. If we were so sophisticated, we would be able to know who that person was who was going to fail, radiate that person, and leave the other 3 people alone. So again, this is a humility that's incredibly important for us to mix with that assurance in order to bring this. And believe me when I tell you, a patient may not even, you know, I've taken care of nuclear physicists, I've taken care of other physicians, I've taken care of doctors, I've taken, you know, people with PhDs, I've taken care of some really smart people. And I have taken care of farmers who didn't get out of the 6th grade. But I think that there is an intelligence, there is a survivor intelligence that is able to, or maybe you don't even want to use the word intelligence, you want to say an intuition. This intuition is a patient, and it doesn't have to be a cancer survivor, it could be really anybody. A patient knows when a caregiver comes into a room and they possess this confidence that's measured or balanced with this humility. If you have too much of confidence or self-assurance, you come off as arrogant, right? Or you come off as cocky. If you have too much humility, you come off as unsure, or you come off as maybe not inspiring that trust. Because what we're coming at is this characteristic, which we haven't even termed, I called it the two-headed monster. I don't know what you want to call it. We'll term it confidence, but it's really a combination of self-assurance and a combination of humility. Together, they create a trust, the trust that my veterinarians instilled in me to make sure that I felt that my dog was going to be okay and that she was in good hands, and that I want all of my survivors to feel with their caregivers. And then this trust then is taken into 2 really important things that we've actually thought so important for you guys that we've made their own modules. One is this shared decision-making process, where that confidence, that doctor who then brings the patient in, who then develops trust in that physician because of that combination of confidence and humility, then they work together in this shared decision-making model, which I would recommend everyone to go back and listen to, about shared decision-making, where the data, the information is explained clearly and thoroughly to the patient. So the patient works together with the doctors to come up with their treatment plan. This is not the days of yore where the doctors told everybody what to do. This is the days where you're entitled to this information. You're entitled to help make the decision, participate in the decision, lead the decision, because it is your body. And lastly, we learned from Dawn Stacy and Claire Ludwig, there's one step further where a patient doesn't just become part of the shared decision-making, you know, protocol. They actually become partners with the physicians. They become partners in research. And not only do they make decisions about their treatments, they help set up the studies that make the decisions on what is the standard of care. I will end my part of this podcast by actually tapping in and trying to talk to our caregivers about cultivating humility and going back to that academic paper. Ironically, genuine humility has a role to play in establishing or reestablishing yourself, your sense of self-assurance. Again, humility, self-assurance together breed confidence, which then create trust, which then create a very positive patient-physician dyad, which then presents itself to make a shared decision and then partner in the end with their team in order to make policy about future treatments. And what the paper tells us to do is tap into humility. cultivate the belief that every life is as valuable as any other, as well as a deep awareness of how little we control and know. Then consider stepping back and embracing your sense of awe at the fact that any of us is ever able to heal anyone else. It's a marvel. Thank life for the extraordinary role you have been given to play in this world as a healer. Then try stepping into that role with gratitude that you found it and for the gift of intelligence that allowed you to take it on. And if you've come this far, you are capable. Angel Santana, have faith, let it begin. I always give you the last word. It was a short and sweet podcast.
It was, but I think it was, you know, less is more. So on this one, I gulped it down. I think it was great to start off with that metaphor and just the way you brought it all in, just the whole process, you know, about learning who you need to, it, trust is the word I'm trying to get at. It's trust. And it's such a hard word. It really is. And that's what people don't realize. Trust is key. And it's a very key component to a lot of success. And also for people that have failed, it's a way of gaining back on your feet. You need trust. You know what I mean? For myself, I don't know why, but I kept thinking about when you were talking about all this. I was just thinking about when I was woken up after my surgery, my back surgery, and they said, Angel, it's time for you to stand up. I had spinal surgery, and they're like, you have to walk. Do you trust me? And I remember saying, yes, I do. Let's walk. And that's all I kept thinking about toward the very end. So trust is a key component. So for that, I'd say awesome. I love it. Absolutely love it.
Croc Nation, I want to use this episode also as a teaser. Angel and I have on August 7th, we'll be taping a podcast with our old friend, Dr. Len Berry, who will be talking about this exact subject, talking about trust and the environment of trust between the patient and their caregiver. As always, I do my gratitude exercise, my gratitude shout outs before the end of any podcast. Angel Santana, have faith, let it begin. God bless you. Thank you for everything, for being the awesome person, producer, friend, and co-host that you are.
Thank you for having me.
Rod Freeman should be back by vacation by the time this podcast comes back. Rod, hope you had a good time. Hope you missed us. Small biz up. Anybody with a small business that wants to get out there, grow their business, Rod Freeman would be your guy. His information should be on our website. I would like to thank Michael John Benzea, Charlotte Larson for their continued support of this podcast, of their love, of their belief, of their amazingness. That's not a word, but as we always do on the podcast here, we make words up. And as always, on behalf of Angel and myself, I always end the podcast the same every week. We both wish you all a very long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life. God bless you. God be with you, fill you with this trust, with this self-assurance, with this humility. Be well. Peace.